Hello, friends. I'm Christine Rain, and this is the second season of the Heroine's Journey podcast. Because life evolves, the teachings continue, and the journey never ends. They say we're made of stories. Here, we explore the most transcendental stories of extraordinary people who, like you, are going through processes of transformation, death and rebirth, and reclaiming their truth. In the first season, the story of each guest focuses on one of four phases of the heroine's journey. If you haven't listened to it, it may not come as a surprise that I highly recommend it. In this second season, with every story, we weave the qualities that the heroine archetype invites us to cultivate throughout the entire journey. It's the gift we receive when we navigate these transformational processes with awareness. However, in this introductory episode of the second season, I review each phase of the journey so that you can listen to the episodes that follow with clarity of the powerful narrative arc that underlies each story. I also share practices and tips for each phase so that you can apply them to your own life or personal myth, depending on where you find yourself in your journey. Remember that the way we tell the story of our life is the way we begin to live our life. I am so excited to welcome you to the second season of the Heroine's Journey podcast. I'm at the beautiful Hotel Belmar, immersed in the cloud forest of Monteverde in Costa Rica. And this is a really special place to me, because of the relationship that I have with the family of the hotel, and also because I lived here for 2 years. So I'm so excited to bring you information about this incredible journey from this magical place. Before explaining the theory behind this journey, I want to try to convince you of why you should listen to this until the end. If you've been through a moment of crisis or are going through one now, you know they can cause really hard emotions such as isolation, confusion, and loneliness. Archetypes such as this one can provide us with a map that we can then use as a tool to understand these moments of crisis as moments of deep transformation, personal growth, and alignment with our purpose. They also give us the incredible gift of seeing our personal story or our personal myth reflected in something larger than ourselves, something that has to do with all of humanity. So, what are archetypes? Archetypes are stories or characters that appear in very diverse cultures across the globe, even cultures that have never been in touch with each other. That's why they're universal. And they also help us weave meaning into our experiences, our life experiences. One of the most important purposes of archetypes is that they remind us that we're more than simply material objects. They connect us with our transcendental nature, with our sacred nature. And they show us, they guide us on how to live a life that is more virtuous and more truthful. With the help of myths and archetypes, we can transform our personal stories into stories that feed into a larger collective growth that we're living as a species, as humankind. And that allows us to understand ourselves and what's happening from a new light, one of more humility and even hope. So I'm going to start explaining the four phases that have been my interpretation and adaptation of Maureen Murdoch's Heroine's Journey, which is a book, and also the work of other people such as Joseph Campbell and his Hero's Journey and Victoria Lynn Smith. This heroine's journey, as I understand it, has four phases: the rupture, the descent, the emergence, and the return. Joseph Campbell has a famous quote that says, "If you travel far enough, you'll eventually find yourself." And I like to think of the heroine's journey as, if you travel deep enough, you'll eventually be yourself. And I think this is the main difference that I see between the hero and the heroine's journey. The hero's journey is one of external adventure, validation, conquest, whereas the heroine's journey is about going really deep into ourselves to really find out who we are. The demons and the dragons that we have to face are internal ones, not external ones. But the beauty of the heroine's journey is that there are so many gems and qualities to be found on the other side of this dark night of the soul. The first phase of the heroine's journey is the rupture, and the rupture starts at the illusion of a perfect world. So, as daughters and sons of capitalistic and patriarchal societies, we've been taught that embodying certain masculine qualities will help us reach a level of happiness and fulfillment. These masculine qualities have to do with success, with overachievement, with perfectionism, and while masculine qualities are really important and a part of every human being, we do live in a society where those qualities have been almost like godlike. So much focus has been put on them that we've lost connection with the female principle, with the feminine. And a lot of what this journey invites us to do is to reconnect with that feminine principle. How does that sacrifice look like in our lives? Well, we feel that even though we might be really successful at our jobs or have a beautiful family or a partner, a nice house, or done all these checks that society tells us to do, we might have a sense of a emptiness, of a spiritual void, or what Murdoch calls feelings of spiritual aridity. And this is because of the price that we've paid because of that over-identification with the masculine. So we've become disconnected from our bodies, from our intuition, from our creativity, from care, self-compassion. So if any of these things relate to you or to your experience of being a woman or being a man, don't worry, it's normal and it's to be expected. But there is more out there. And oftentimes, realizing that comes in the form of a great rupture that appears in our life. And this rupture is a moment of disillusionment when all of those expectations that we had about that perfect world fall before our eyes. And it can take many different forms. It can be in the form of an unexpected accident, a very painful separation or divorce, an unexpected illness, a change of job, a change of location. This rupture can really take many different forms. And what will eventually happen when we're going through this moment of rupture and we start questioning a lot of things is that there will be a moment of realization, where we can no longer unsee what we're seeing. It's like a before and after moment where it becomes very clear that this call to adventure that life is giving us and that we're somehow resisting or that we're afraid of embarking upon because it means leaving our ordinary lives behind and all that we've built and worked so hard for, that we just have to take it. We have to cross that threshold. So, if you find yourself in this moment of rupture, what I would recommend is that you really open up with curiosity and with deep awareness to the present moment. Because in moments like this, in moments of crisis, in moments of change, the universe or God or nature, whatever you want to call it, will begin to speak to us in more subtle ways. So it becomes very relevant to be aware of different signs or symbolic language that might be showing itself or unraveling itself to us. Another important thing is to really trust your intuition, to listen to yourself and create space for that little voice inside that has maybe been neglected for many years and that now can feel like it's shouting, I can't take this anymore. We need to do something different. Something has to change. Pay attention to that voice and create space for it. And the third thing is to really open yourself up to allies, to mentors, to people that may appear in your path to show you and guide you along the way. Those people become sacred, not just because of the shared reality that you'll be able to have with them, but because they have important clues onto where to go next. And that's going to be important for the second phase, the phase of the descent. The second phase, the descent, requires us to cross a threshold from the ordinary world to the extraordinary world. And that threshold to me is about that moment of awakening, that moment where life as you saw it will never be the same because of this big event of rupture that just happened in your life, these fallen expectations. The descent is probably the most challenging of all of the phases because it throws us into uncharted territory. And it's what some people talk about as the dark night of the soul. In this phase, we're like in a forest, in a dark forest with no path. There's no map that shows us where to go. Those allies and symbols and mentors that existed in the previous phase are not there anymore. And we're confronted with the deepest, most intimate parts of ourselves. And this is what some people call the dark feminine, the unconscious, those shadow parts of ourselves. So going through the descent feels chaotic. It can be filled with confusion, with anger, with rage, with fear, with shame. It's all the things that we've left behind and that now we might feel really scared about, you know? So it's a really difficult moment of everything feeling stirred up, of not having clarity of where we are or where we're going. So what do we do when we're going through this moment? It can seem very simple or even counterintuitive, but one of the most powerful gifts of the descent is simply allowing ourselves to feel, creating space for all of those emotions that might have been hiding or that we might have been pretending weren't there, to simply be and to just welcome them and hug them and let them be seen, let them feel heard. All those different voices in ourselves that have been wanting to come out need to be seen and heard. Another important aspect for me is developing a relationship with fear. I don't know about you guys, but for me, fear is something that accompanies me throughout my life, no matter what I'm doing or not doing. And so developing a relationship with fear where I can somehow talk to it as if it were like my inner child or a younger version of myself and say, hey, like, I'm here, I'm gonna hold your hand, we're gonna walk together, versus this insurmountable creature that just completely takes over my life, is really important. We need to face our fears and talk to it somehow, develop a relationship with it, however it works with you, and let it know that while we're listening to it and while we're gonna take care of it, it's not the captain of our ship. We are the captains of our ships. The descent culminates in a symbolic death. The descent is asking us to let go of all the roles, mother, professional, wife, friend, daughter, whatever it is, all the roles and identities that we've been working so hard to construct and to build a self-image around, to let those go. And that's an incredibly painful process because, like I said, we've been carefully polishing all of those things about ourselves. But what we need to do is to truly surrender to the process, to trust the process, and to let go of all of those skins and parts of ourselves and identities that need to die in order to give space to the new. And while that's extremely scary and painful, we need to go through it. We need to embrace that process. And finally, because this is a moment where we're so in touch with the depth of our soul, with that underworld of emotions, and that can feel so chaotic and so intense, I find that having a creative outlet while we're going through this moment is particularly relevant. For me, writing is really important, but for you, it might be singing or it might be dancing. Whatever it is, make sure you find a way to express all of this internal turmoil that is happening so that you can engage your body and you can also let go of all of these things that are going through us, passing through us, and that need to die. Remember, there can be a lot of pain. There can be a lot of hurt. But that's not the only thing that there is. The third phase of the heroine's journey is called the emergence. And I like to recur to a metaphor of nature for this phase. Imagine that in the previous phase in the descent, you're a plant or a tree in which many parts of you fell to the ground and had to die. It could be leaves, it could be branches. And now you're just like laying on the moist, dark, wonderfully smelly soil. And all of these leaves and branches that you let go of are now in the soil, becoming the fertile ground for you to emerge into a new, different plant that is even stronger. The emergence is like that. It's a whisper calling us back to life. And because we've just been through something so intense, I mean, a symbolic death is no walk in the park, right? It's something really, really intense. We've just shed parts of ourselves. We can feel really shy in this moment. We have this curiosity and this awakening, but it feels shy. It feels subtle, right? So, something that's very useful in this phase is to remain with a quality of openness, of curiosity, of how do I want to reassemble myself as this new person? I'm probably carrying things from my past, certain things, but also new things are emerging into this new being that really represents a more authentic version of myself because I've let go of all of those expectations that no longer serve me. One of the things that's really beautiful about this phase is that we feel this urgency to reclaim the feminine principle. And what do I mean by that? I mean intuition, I mean reconnection with our body, with our sensuality, with our creativity, with care, with community. All of these things that have been sacrificed because of over-identifying with the masculine, after this death, it just feels natural that we want to go into that direction. And it's a beautiful coming of age where we feel called to community, we feel called to sisterhood, to friendships, after being in a very lonely, dark space. Allowing ourselves to ask for support. And allowing ourselves to receive support is another beautiful quality of this phase. As, especially as women, but this happens to many of us, we can take a lot of pride in being that independent person that can do everything by themselves. And that's probably what led us to burnout to begin with in the rupture in the first phase. Well, that paradigm is over. And now we understand that we are interdependent beings that not only thrive as their authentic essence is able to flourish, but that also thrives thanks to the help and the support of sisters and other people around us. But in order for that to happen, we need to ask for help. We need to receive support. And I know that for many of us, that requires learning to do so. So, what would I recommend if you're in this phase? Well, as I said earlier, maintaining a attitude of curiosity and of learning towards life is extremely relevant and useful in this phase. Also, asking ourselves the question, what nurtures me right now? I've just been through this death and moment of transmutation, right? Like, so what nurtures my soul? For example, for me, having deep conversations with friends is something that really nurtures my spark, my connection with myself and with the world. So that's something that I want to create space for. For you, it could be spending time with family or being out in nature or going out on an adventure. Whatever it is that nurtures your soul, make sure to create space for it because that's what's going to give power and energy and motivation to that little plant that is now trying to emerge. And finally, something that you can ask yourself, and it can be almost like a mantra, is how can I connect with flow and let go of control? So the emergence is all about radical acceptance. It's all about understanding that change is an inevitable part of life, and that no matter how much we try to control, things are hardly ever going to turn out how we plan them to be. And if we continue believing that, we're just going to endlessly feel frustrated. I'm sure you can relate to this. So we want to try to loosen our grip from that attitude, that restrictive attitude of control, and really learn to flow with life, surrender, trust things as they unfold. How can I be more in the flow, and how can I let go of control? That's a question that I want to ask myself again and again so that more and more I can learn how to be more and do less. That's one of the beautiful gifts of the emergence. If you find yourself in the emergence, remember, we can develop our capacity to be alchemists. We can make honey from our darkness. The fourth phase of the heroine's journey is a beautiful phase of integration. At this point, we've had a very painful rupture that led us to an awakening. We followed a call into the underworld, went into the descent, confronted our shadows and the dark feminine, had symbolic deaths, and emerged from that with the help of our friends and community and family. And now there's another threshold that we're crossing into the ordinary world again. So we're coming from the extraordinary and into the ordinary. And to me, that's like an initiation where we feel this new sense of who we are and how we are in the world. We're coming from a place of stillness, we're coming from a place of being, and we understand that we no longer need to go out there and force change into the world. Quite to the contrary, somehow the world is changed just because of us embodying who we are in the most authentic and pure sense. It's a beautiful transformation, and people can notice it and even though we're not seeking that external validation anymore, because we give ourselves that internal validation, that power that we now have and that we want to share with the collective is evident to other people, and it's something that people want to celebrate with us. So this is a moment where we really understand that the more we're able to balance and integrate these beautiful masculine qualities with these beautiful feminine principles and qualities, the more we're able to access our power and also come and show up in the world from a place of deep acceptance of who we are, of who other people are, deep awareness of ourselves as part of this web of interdependence. Something that feels very natural at this point of the journey is self-care, as well as our desire to take care of others and to take care of Mother Nature. So, something that we can ask ourselves in this moment of the journey, or if you feel you're embodying this phase, is what is the gift that I now want to share with the world that really is an authentic extension, that truly is an authentic extension of who I am? It feels so natural. How can I make sure to not fall into those habits and patterns that I was incarnating in the illusion of the perfect world before starting this journey? So, whether it's perfectionism or overworking or pleasing other people and sacrificing my own needs, like just checking in with yourself on how you can create strategies that support you from not falling into those old patterns. And also, you might want to check in with yourself of how those feminine and masculine qualities are showing up in your life, and how can you make sure to keep balancing and integrating them, right? Sometimes during the descent or the emergence, there's some really important work that we need to do around healing the wounded masculine and also healing the feminine, which we've been setting aside for so long. So, really honoring that marriage, that divine union, is something that feels important in this phase. If you find yourself in the return, remember that spark that you have within yourself and that you now want to offer to the collective fire is sacred. Take care of it, nurture it. It's your biggest gift and the biggest contribution that you have to give. Also, remember that developing a relationship with the unknown and with our capacity to hold open questions is a spiritual practice. And the more we're able to develop that spiritual practice, the more fluid and beautiful the ride of life will be. So, something I want to warn you about the heroine's journey is that while it looks like a very organized cycle and circle, in reality, it ends up being a lot more like a spiral. And it's interesting because the spiral is a sacred symbol in a lot of cultures. And once we start navigating these processes of change with this consciousness and using this narrative arch, we'll realize that oftentimes when we think we're in the return, we have a new rupture that throws us under in the descent, and there's a new emergence that has to happen because there are other things that we needed to let go of. Sometimes it might feel like we're in different phases at the same time. The map is to be used loosely in that sense. It provides us with a certain structure, but in reality, life is a lot more fluid. And if you're familiar with the hero's journey, you might notice that there are certain things that feel similar about the two, and they're definitely complementary in a lot of ways. But to my understanding, the most important difference is that the hero's journey is an outward journey and the heroine's journey is the inward journey. So let's look at this with an example. There are many films and books that use the narrative arch of the hero. What is an example of one that uses the heroine's journey? Dorothy from The Wizard of Oz is a good example of the heroine's journey. So Dorothy is living an ordinary, mundane life in Kansas. And while things are okay and they're comfortable and safe, she doesn't feel heard. She doesn't feel seen by her caretakers, her aunt in this case. And she also dreams of this place over the rainbow. That's like the call to adventure. Eventually, this hurricane comes and throws her, takes her and Toto, her dog, into the world of Oz. And I see that hurricane as the crossing of the threshold. It's a journey she didn't choose, just like oftentimes we don't choose our ruptures. We're thrown into the journey from unexpected events. So this hurricane throws her to Oz, and it's this unknown world that could be seen as the descent, right? There's chaos, there's confusion. She wants to get back home. She doesn't know what to do. And all of a sudden, this mentor appears, or this ally, which is the Good Witch of the North. And she shows her that the road is through the yellow brick road, or that the path that she needs to take is the yellow brick road. And once she receives this guidance, she meets other allies along the way, the Tin Man and the Lion and the Scarecrow. And all of them need different things. So they decide to unite and go together to Oz, who apparently is the person that can help her get back home. So it's interesting because at first it seems like this is kind of a hero's journey, and that Oz tells her that what she needs to do is to recuperate the broom from the Wicked Witch of the West. So it's like this outward conquest. But really, when she gets the broom and takes it to Oz, she realizes that Oz doesn't have the power to take her home. And that really, that entire journey was about facing her own demons and dragons, her own fears. So much so that after she finishes the journey, her friends all give her these different qualities that she has embodied along the journey and that have given her this inner power, this inner strength, right? So the Scarecrow gives her the brain with that allows her to have discernment. The Lion gives her the heart so that she can feel her full range of emotions. The Tin Man gives her the heart because she has allowed herself to feel her full range of emotions. And the Lion gives her courage, which is what she has able to summon for herself to go on this incredible journey. Also, she realizes that with her ruby slippers, she has the power to get herself back home. And this is a really important symbolic moment on how we tend to give up that power and give it to external forces outside of ourselves. And that's a beautiful moment of reflecting back that we always have that inner power within ourselves to reach what we want, right? It's a matter of recognizing that and cultivating that within ourselves. So in the end, she's able to take all these beautiful qualities that she learned along the way and take herself back home. And what I love about this example is that, as Maureen Murdoch says in her book, most of the time we need to go through the hero's journey first before we go on the heroine's journey. And that happens to her in a way too. She has this external conquest of finding the broom first, but then realizing that it's about that internal journey that connected her with the inner power that was always there to begin with. So why did I get so excited when I first learned about this beautiful, profound archetype? I think it's not a surprise for anyone that as a society, we're going through very complex times where people are feeling really lonely, empty, devoid of purpose, with lack of clarity, and also with lack of skills to go through really difficult, adverse, unexpected moments. The heroine's journey provides us with this map that allows us to use it as a tool to navigate these moments of change and transformation with so much more consciousness And that really feels like a gift. It gives us clarity of what we're going through. It allows us to understand ourselves within a particular phase and see what we need to be able to flourish in those different phases. And so I believe that it really gives us hope as well to understand that we're not going to be in those moments, in those dark moments forever, that there's light at the end of the tunnel. And more significantly, at least to me, I see in the heroine's journey that change of paradigm, that social transformation that many of us are seeking. Why? Because of the qualities that it invites us to embody. For example, it invites us to move from individualism to interdependence. It invites us to collaborate instead of competing. It invites us to hold open questions as a part of life instead of rushing to try to find the answers to things, understanding that things unravel in their own time. It invites us to stillness, to acceptance, to sharing power. And instead of focusing on what can I achieve for myself, it invites us to ask the question, how can I serve the collective dream? Imagine if we all did the inner work that was necessary for us to embrace our shadows, embrace all the parts of ourselves, so that we can show up as people and leaders and teachers that embody masculine and feminine qualities in such a beautiful way and model a different way of being and showing up in the world. What would happen if we all did that inner work? I found this archetype when I was going through one of the hardest moments of my life. It was a period of 5 years where I was diagnosed with cancer, came out being a cancer survivor, but also lived through a very difficult separation and had to let go of one of my closest cousins because of a sudden death from a cancer diagnosis as well. This has been a tool that has really helped me shed light and clarity and consciousness to one of the most tumultuous and difficult moments in my own life, and I want to help you and accompany you to do the same. If you feel called to have a mentor or even better, an ally to go through a moment of transition in your own life, we're going to leave a link below so that you can contact me. I would be honored to be that ally for you. In the first season, we have beautiful, raw, vulnerable conversations that focus on each phase of the heroine's journey. While on the second season, I invited guests that I believe to be embodying different qualities of the heroines to talk about their entire stories. The purpose of the podcast is to accompany people that are going through moments of profound change and transition in their own lives. So I hope that you'll make use of that resource as well so that you can continue diving deep on this incredible journey that is the heroine's journey. This episode was made possible by Hotel Belmar. With a vision of regenerative sustainability, it offers elevated hospitality while embracing nature's transformative energy in the Monterrey Cloud Forest. You can also find this episode as a video in YouTube. It's our first video, so bear with us, but we made it with lots of love, with the hotel and the cloud forest as its backdrop. I encourage you to go check it out. This episode has original music from my favorite musician, singer-songwriter Nick Mulvey. If you enjoy these conversations, follow us at the Heroine's Journey Project on social media and at christinerain.org/podcast
where you can sign up for our newsletter and be the first to know about new episodes and access resources to accompany you on your own journey. If you think that someone would benefit from listening to this conversation, please take a minute to share it with them and support our work by following and rating us on whatever podcast platform you listen to us. These small gestures make a huge difference. It's the love fuel that keeps us motivated to do the hard work and makes sure that this reaches as many people as possible. Thank you for being here, for listening, and for being interested in these deep conversations. See you in our next episode.